And you mentioned a really good point, and I just want to emphasize it a little bit that it's not the amount, it's more the ratio between them that matters.
Welcome to the world of muscle, smoke, and mirrors, where it's all about muscle, health, history, training, nutrition, bodybuilding, and state of mind.
Hey, listener, you're back with episode 48 of The World of Muscle with Tomash and Randy. Hey, Randy.
Good morning, Tomash.
How's it going?
Pretty good. It's a nice day out. It seems like it's a nice day out. I haven't really been out to see if it's still humid or not.
Oh, yesterday was a disaster here. It was 100% humidity. It was just, you stepped outside, you started sweating.
Yeah, I don't like working out in the summer. It took me a long time to figure out, why don't I like working out in the summer? I finally realized I don't like breathing water.
Yeah, that's exactly how it felt.
Kind of like an awkward way of training in altitude, just less oxygen. It's just people, well, you know, I tell them, don't get down if you're not doing your PRs or anything. Like, it's just a tough atmosphere to work out in the summer.
Yes. Now, speaking of working out, the topic of our show this week is fats. And this is going to be a two-parter. So this is going to be part one. Randy, do you want to take away with the history, how we did with carbohydrates?
Yeah, fats are a little bit more complicated. And it was another one of those projects I did back in school where I had to memorize a lot, and quite a bit has stayed with me. Some has not. This will be a primer because that's all I'm qualified to do. Me ain't a lipid biochemist. And like I said, the chemistry of fats is very complicated. But just the general topic of fats, this has got to be the most controversial because of the lipid hypothesis that we have discussed before. The most controversial macronutrient on the planet, because it has been so misunderstood and maligned over the past 50, 60, 70 years. Most people don't understand that they hear the term fatty acid, triglyceride, fat, lipid, oil, you know, cholesterol, phospholipid. They really are all under the lipid family. And most people, fats and oils, a lot of people, they're both essentially fats. The oil is typically liquid at room temperature, and fats are typically solid at room temperature. Animal fats are typically the ones more solid at room temperature, and vegetable oils are typically the ones that are liquid at room temperature. There is probably the most common thing people are hearing today is triglyceride, because everybody says, how's your cholesterol levels? How are your triglyceride levels?
Yes.
Triglycerides are fats. Okay, they're composed of what we'll say one of the building blocks of fats. Remember the building blocks of carbohydrates were the monocarbohydrates, glucose, fructose, and galactose.
Yes,
they're the common are fatty acids. That's kind of one of the building blocks. The glycerol, it's what's called a three carbon backbone that holds three fatty acids. That's triglyceride, and triglycerides exist in animals and fats, and they're transported and taken apart, reconstructed in our body to be transported around our body. But the fatty acids, another common term out there that everybody's familiar with are EFAs, essential fatty acids. They're deemed essential because our body can't produce them. We have to get them in our diet. Go ahead.
And on that topic, there were no essential carbohydrates. I just wanted to make that point. Go ahead.
Yeah, the body can pretty much make and exist pretty much without hardly any carbohydrates in the diet. But the fats, the essential fats, and there are also essential amino acids the body cannot produce, it must get in the diet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which we'll probably talk about another show. But with fatty acids, here's some more terminology people I've heard before but probably don't understand, are saturated and unsaturated fats, okay? Now, there really isn't, even though I just said earlier, animal fats are typically solid at room temperature, like lard and beef tallow. They're composed primarily of saturated fats, but they're not all. A triglyceride that holds three fatty acids, they're not all the same fatty acids. One could be a long-chain saturated fatty acid. The other one could be a medium-chain MCT fatty acid. The other one could be a polyunsaturated fatty acid. They vary, okay? And with a saturated fatty acid, typically found primarily in animal fats, it's a long straight chain of carbon atoms saturated with hydrogen. Okay, because another term out there you've heard is hydrogenation. Okay, we'll get to that a little bit. These are flat, these are especially straight chains, these fatty acids, with what's called monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. They're missing some hydrogen along that carbon chain, and they have what's called cis bonds, double bonds, where the chain bends. So they're not straight like a saturated fat. Thus, they don't pack as tightly. So when an animal fat having more saturated fat and having that long, straight fatty acid, they pack pretty tight. Thus, those tend to be solid at room temperature. Where the polyunsaturated and monounsaturated fats, they have those bends, the cis bends. Those bends all fit something in terms of this, within the body, they react in a certain way. But they don't pack so tightly because of the bends. Thus, they're not solid. They're more liquid at room temperature.
And looking into the origin of the word saturated, it means stable. And unsaturated means unstable. So that's why when they're packed so closely together, they can be solid.
Yeah, also the word saturated means like full, right? It's full.
Full,
it's
yes. Full.
Unsaturated means not quite full. And that's it. The saturated are full of hydrogen, where the polyunsaturated, they have the double bond and makes the bend in there. Okay, we've heard of those essential fats, the omega-3s, omega-6s. Okay. The difference between omega-3s and omega-6s are there's typically two places on the long fatty acid chain where there's double bonds, so it bends. And with omega-3, it's on the third carbon at the methionine, which you don't have to concern yourself about. And with the omega-6, the first bend is at the sixth carbon from the methionine. So that's just to give you an idea why they call them omega-3s, omega-6s. The 3 and 6 basically identify where the first double bond is and where the first bend is. With omega-3s, there's three places where it has double bonds. So it's a more complex bending with the omega-6, where there's two double bonds and two bends. Again, these bends all have specific they have specific functions. Those bends meet certain functions, okay? So they're there. So when we hydrogenate, I sent you a link, because I've described hydrogenation before, but this is from Dr. Mary Anig, who describes when we take an oil, and we want to hydrogenate it to make it solid at room temperature to act have more of the characteristics of a saturated fat. This is the process that's done that actually damages the fatty acid. Do you want to read that?
Yes. So hydrogenation. This is the process that turns polyunsaturates, normally liquid at room temperature, into fats that are solid at room temperature, margarine and shortening. To produce them, manufacturers begin with the cheapest oils, soy, corn, cottonseed, or canola, already rancid from the extraction process, and mix them with tiny metal particles, usually nickel oxide. The oil with its nickel catalyst is then subjected to hydrogen gas in a high-pressure, high-temperature reactor. Next, soap-like emulsifiers and starch are squeezed into the mixture to give it a better consistency. The oil is yet again subjected to high temperatures when it is steam cleaned. This removes its unpleasant odor. Margarine's natural color, an unappetizing gray, is removed by bleach. Dyes and strong flavors must then be added to make it resemble butter. Finally, the mixture is compressed and packaged in blocks or tubs and sold as a health food. So this is about hydrogenation. And how she mentions butter. I mean, that was what people were used to eating up until they started this process of trying to pass vegetable oil as...
That began with Procter & Gamble around 1911 when they released Crisco. And they didn't know what to do with their cottonseed oil once the light bulb came in. And they were making lamps, and they're using lamps and candles with the oil. And so they came up with another idea. Let's feed it to their people.
Yeah,
right?
let's make it
spread. And it looks pathetic. It smelled awful, and it looked awful. But they were able to deodorize it and colorize it and package it off. And again, this is the nonsense that still goes on today.
The butter imposter.
The butter imposter, because of our dietary dum-dum that we discussed before. But
yes, much like soy, the textured vegetable protein.
When they hydrogenate, when they put it through that reactor, that pressure and bubble hydrogen. Bubble hydrogen gas to it. It takes those cis bends and it straightens them, but it twists and creates a trans fat that's toxic to our body. Those hydrogenated oils literally interfere with the process of creating eicosanoids in the body, but we won't get into right this second. But it took a long time. These toxic fats were in our diet for many decades. And so Dr. Marianik fought hard to expose them in the 1980s because there was still such reluctance because of the money being made off the fat and cholesterol hysteria that scared people away from eating natural animal fats and butters and, and coconut oils and beef, and to eat these newly processed vegetable and seed oils that weren't typically in our diet before, you know, 100 years ago, right? So
Yes, exactly. Well, let me read the part or the paragraph about partially hydrogenated margarine. Okay. And trans fats. Okay. Partially hydrogenated margarines and shortenings are even worse for you than the high refined vegetable oils from which they are made because of chemical changes that occur during the hydrogenation process. Under high temperatures, the nickel catalyst causes the hydrogen atoms to change position on the fatty acid chain. Before hydrogenation, pairs of hydrogen atoms occur together on the chain, causing the chain to bend slightly and creating a concentration of electrons at the site of the double bond. This is called the cis formation, the configuration most commonly found in nature. With hydrogenation, one hydrogen atom of the pair is moved to the other side so that the molecule straightens. This is called the trans formation, rarely found in nature. Most of these man-made trans fats are toxins to the body, but unfortunately your digestive system does not recognize them as such. End of quote.
Yeah. See, it creates that alien fat that
pretends to be normal, yeah. But it's not.
Yeah. So the oil stiffens up and it gets that constituency of a saturated fat, but biochemically it's not the same, and it caused a lot of problems.
And it's been done for decades, right? And only in the last 5, maybe 10 max, not even 10, I don't think it's been 10 years since they recognized how bad trans fats are. Has it been made public?
Yeah, it just being for the truth eventually makes its way out. There's a small percentage of natural trans fats in ruminant animals, like conjugated linoleic acid, but it's not. That's different when the body's in nature is in control of it. When we digest fats, our body has a hard time distinguishing from those trans fats. And when the digestion of fats, like I said, we eat fats and they're mostly in their triglycerides with the 3 fatty acids on the glycerol chain. They're broken down in the body into fatty acids. And basically, there's always either a triglyceride with 3 fatty acids. They'll be broken down into a monoglyceride with 1 fatty acid, or diglyceride. It's never broken down immediately into where there's the glycerol is the 3 carbon backbone is set free. There's always 1 or 2 or 3, but they're broken down in the MCTs, the medium chain triglycerides that we've talked a little bit before in another show. They have a different digestion pathway. They're almost treated like carbs, where in the digestive tract in the small intestine, they'll go straight through the portal vein to the liver with carbohydrates and to be used as fuel, where the longer fatty acids, such as in animal fats, stearic acid, oleic acid from olive oil, and the omega-6, omega-3s, they're all like 18 carbon chains long. They get wrapped up within the intestinal wall. They'll get wrapped up in what's called the chylomicrons, like a protein layer, and they'll go into the lymphatic system. They don't go to the liver first, and they don't really understand why it actually does this. And they'll get dumped later into the bloodstream up around the clavicle area, and then they can make their way to fatty adipose tissues, adipose meat, fat cells, or to back to the liver where it can be processed again. So it's a different pathways for fats. Fats have to be emulsified to be digested, which means that's what bile salts are for. Within the gallbladder, spews into the stomach, into the small intestine. So fats are usually hydrophobic. They're afraid of water. They don't mix with water, but that's where the lipases are, the enzymes that digest it. So bile emulsifies fat. It brings it into the liquid where it can be broken down. And with these fatty acids, like the omega-3s, omega-6s, they're very volatile. With those cis bonds, those double bonds, and the way the atoms are, they're very reactive, thus very volatile. That's why you can't cook with vegetable oils by themselves. That's why they want to hydrogenate them, to make them more stable. Those saturated fats are more stable and endure heat better than vegetable oils. Because when you put vegetables to heat, they become rancid. And remember when we did the cod liver oil show? We talked about hydrolytic and oxidative rancidity. The hydrolytic rancidity was basically almost like when you take the fatty acids off the glycerol. That's almost like digestion. That's what Ogden's promoted as pre-digestion. It wasn't such a big deal. Yeah, it would cause some odor. But the oxidative rancidity, where the fatty acid chain began to break up, that was more toxic and different. And under more controversy, but that's the with today eating the oils. The people, we have a diet that's naturally more in omega 6s, omega 3s, and people wanting to take supplements of oils. It's hard to trust even the processes that cold press these flax oils into flax seeds into their oils, because there's still processes and chemicals that have to be used, and those fatty acids are so volatile, we really don't realize how much damage is being done to them.
Because they're unsaturated.
Because they're unsaturated and they're not as stable as a saturated fat. Medium chain triglycerides, such as in palm kernel oil and coconut oil, they're fully saturated. Their carbons are all saturated with hydrogen. They're shorter chains. They're like between eight carbons, 10 carbons and 12 the eight carbons caprylic acid. That's what's popular with, I think John Perillo made popular in the 80s. And then
it's actually making a comeback now. They're talking about it again.
Yeah.
It's funny how things kind of go in circles.
Especially with the coffee, the bulletproof coffee.
Because
the medium chain triglycerides are not treated the same in digestion. They're almost like a carb. They go into all the medium chains and short chains. The butter has a good amount of short chain, 4-carbon butyric acid and 6-carbon caprylic acid. They have antimicrobial, antifungal effects, as do the MCTs, the medium chains ones, which are the caprylic, capric, and lauric. Lauric is the 12-carbon one that's very popular in coconut oil. I think it's something like 42% to 50% lauric acid in coconut. The only other source of lauric acid like that in nature is human breast milk, right?
The one thing before we move away from omega-3s and getting them from flax oil versus cod versus other fish oils, people rarely only now they're starting to talk about how grass-fed meats and animals, lamb, pork, even and beef, have high amounts of omega-3s in them.
Yes, compared to a commercially raised animal or a chicken, even in an egg that could have a 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 ratio of 6-to-3s, it could have a 20-to-1 ratio in a commercial egg, or 20-to-21 in favor of the omega-6, which is way too many. Now, again, these essential fatty acids in their pure state with their cis bonds and the bends, they're used in the body. They're like fats aren't just fuel. Fats are also constituents of cell membranes. Like I said, a lot of them have antimicrobial, antifungal, antiviral effect. But they've also precursors to certain hormones. These omega-3s and omega-6s are used to create eicosanoids or prostaglandins. They're sometimes called autocrine-paracrine hormones. They're not like endocrine hormones like testosterone, which are produced in one gland and transported through the blood. These eicosanoids are created right at the cell where they're needed. They're almost like, they're very hard to study because almost like a flash hormone. And when they broke on the scene in the 90s, that's how fats kind of, remember, fats all got demonized in the 80s.
Yes.
When they started to realize, well, look, we have essential fat. How can it be evil when they're called essential and we need them? Okay. So they said, okay, the omega-6, the omega-3, they're okay. So then we said, take a couple tablespoons of omega-6 and 3s just for the essential fats. Because the Barry Sears in his The Zone, he made them the eicosanoid very popular. He started to explain, but he over-exaggerated the situation where you have good and bad. In the body, like cholesterol, good and bad. There is no good and bad. They have a balancing effect where these eicosanoids would create a situation that would cause bronchial tubes to dilate. Another series would make them constrict. Some would make blood vessels dilate. Other ones would make them constrict. Some would make blood thinner, some would make it coagulate. Again, in a crisis situation, you need that coagulation. All right. So they're called series 1 and 2 prostaglandins and series 3, which come from more from omega 3s. And again, it's a complicated topic. I'm not an expert on it.
But you mentioned a really good point, and I just want to emphasize it a little bit, that it's not the amount, it's more the ratio between them that matters.
Yes. And typically the fact and how healthy our body is, see, these essential fats will go through what's called elongation, having carbons added to the fatty acid. So you take a linoleic, omega-3, omega-6, a linoleic and alpha-linolenic acids. They're 18 carbon chains. They can be elongated to 20 and then also desaturated. Remember I said omega-3s have the 3 double bonds and they've been and 3 bends, and omega-6 have the 2 double bonds, 2 double bends. Well, you've heard of the fish oil EPA, right? That's icosapentaenoic acid. Penta is 5. So they'll take the omega-3, they'll add, it'll elongate it by a couple carbon chains and desaturate it 2 more times to give it 5 double bonds and create more bends. And those hydrogenated oils can interfere with that desaturation process, the removal of hydrogen to create more bends. So that's another thing that these hydrogenated oils do. Hydrogenated oils, they cause a lot of problems, but that's just one of them that they do. Because these, if you're healthy and you're eating properly, your body can just take those omega-3s, omega-6 as found in your diet, and it can elongate them, desaturate it, make EPA and DHA, docosahexaenoic acid. That's 6 double bonds and elongate it to 22 carbon chains. And they say that's what the kind of fats that the brain likes. So
yeah, and EPA is more of an anti-inflammatory fatty acid.
Yeah, the DHA and the EPA have more than, and they're done from the threes. They can, that same anti-inflammatory is also in the series 1. That's why Sears was kind of just making a pretty short, not complete explanation of it, but it's a balancing act between series 1 and 2 and a kind of an attenuating job of omega-3s long term to keep the body in a healthy state. Remember, I think I told you one of my friends and clients was bleeding out his rear end so bad, and he was taking like 5 to 6 tablespoons of flaxseed oil a day. So you can see the effect that these things on a hormonal level they can do by being irresponsible, because nowhere in history could anybody consume that amount of flaxseed oil. He dared try to eat that much flaxseed, and it would have been coming out the other end too, but not in blood. Been from the shrapnel coming out, but it would have put the seeds out there. So we have to be careful with these prostaglandins. Yeah.
How much and what and which and exactly, especially from vegetable sources. Do you want to wrap it up on this for part 1? And then in the next episode, we can go into how it actually affects our listener and what they can take away from all of this.
Sure. And how they got demonized and stuff.
Yeah,
we can stop here.
Okay. Well, this is the end of part 1, and part 2 is coming next week.
Thank you for listening to The World of Muscle, Smoke, and Mirrors. We hope you've enjoyed the content of this episode, and we're looking forward to sharing more next time.